making my way to the front of the auditorium on a Sunday night, greeting people, and came to the very front row where we had a couple of twin boys seated. They were about 7 or 8 years old at the time. And one of them said, "Mr. Bubba, are you preaching tonight?" And I said, "I sure am." And he said, "You are?" And his eyes got real big and his smile got real big and my head got real big. And he turned to his twin brother and said, "He gives short lessons." And that's why he was excited. Well, I don't plan to preach very long tonight, but I do beg of your attention in the short time we have together as we consider from the Word of God. And I want to ask you to turn to Genesis chapter 39, and we'll spend the majority of our time in this text considering this topic that has already been introduced. I'm appreciative both this morning and this evening, not only with the ability that the song leaders have displayed, but their thoughtfulness in choosing songs to coordinate with the sermons. And the ones tonight, just as this morning, you would have thought we had worked on the same script, and just really well done, and that does help, and I appreciate that. I carry with me when I preach a pocket New Testament. It's kind of a handy tool to get someplace really quick if I need to. But I would never want to give the impression that because I carry a pocket New Testament, that somehow means that I don't think the Old Testament is very important. Since we're under the new law, we might as well not even study the Old Testament because it just doesn't have any value. But when you study the New Testament, what you see is the New Testament stands upon the foundation of the Old. In fact, every time in the New Testament where you see the word Scripture and it's capitalized, the New Testament writers are referring to the law of Moses. So when Paul said all Scripture is given by inspiration of God and is profitable, he's talking about the Old Testament. When the apostles preached in the synagogues, when they went from city to city, and we read that Paul reasoned from the Scriptures that Jesus was the Christ, he did that from the Old Testament Scriptures. And when we get to Romans chapter 15 and verse 4, where Paul said, "Whatever was written before was written for our learning, that we through perseverance and encouragement of the Scriptures might have hope," he was referring to the Old Testament Scriptures. The sermon tonight is a sermon of encouragement that we might have hope. And we're going to draw from the Old Testament Scriptures. Nearly 20 times in the Bible, three names are linked together. They became the face of the Old Testament covenant between God and the Israelites. And those names are Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. But have you ever thought about how much space and time is given to telling the life of the fourth patriarch, the son of Jacob, Joseph? In fact, if we were to look at the book of Genesis, the only character who gets more chapters devoted to telling about his life and story than Joseph is Abraham, the father of the faithful. And so I just like to wonder, why is that? Why did God choose to tell us more about Joseph? Not in an effort just to hit the highlights or skim the high points, but give us great detail about the life of this fourth patriarch. Well, could it be that Joseph is one character of the Bible that we see ourselves in perhaps more than many others? We become so connected to him that we even name our sons after Joseph because we see his life in our life. Have you ever been accused of doing something you didn't do? Have you ever, just for standing up for what was right, been persecuted, even by your own family? We've been there. But how many of us have responded the same way Joseph did? How many of us have taken hit after hit to our faith and still held on to an unwavering confidence in God? In Genesis chapter 39, Joseph has been sold by his own brothers into slavery. And we read that when he had been taken down to Egypt, that Potiphar, an Egyptian officer of Pharaoh, the captain of the guard, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him down there. And the Lord was with Joseph, so he became a successful man. And he was in the house of his master the Egyptian, and his master saw that the Lord was with him, and how the Lord caused all that he did to prosper in his hand. So Joseph found favor in his sight and became his personal servant, and he made him overseer over his house, and all that he owned he put in his charge. And it came about from the time he made him overseer in his house and over all that he owned, the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house on account of Joseph. Thus the Lord's blessing was upon all that he owned in the house and in the field. So he left everything he owned in Joseph's charge, and with him there he did not concern himself with anything except the food which he ate. Now Joseph was handsome in form and appearance. And it came about after these events that his master's wife looked with desire at Joseph, and she said, "Lie with me." But he refused and said to his master's wife, "Behold, with me here, my master does not concern himself with anything in the house, and he has put all that he owns in my charge. There is no one greater in the house than I, and he has withheld nothing from me except you, because you are his wife. How then could I do this great evil and sin against God?" And it came about, as she spoke to Joseph day after day, that he did not listen to her to lie beside her or be with her. And it happened one day that he went into the house to do his work, and none of the men of the household were there inside. And she caught him by his garment, saying, "Lie with me." And he left his garment in her hand and fled and went outside. When she saw that he had left his garment in her hand and had fled outside, she called to the men of her household and said to them, "See, he has brought in a Hebrew to us to make sport of us. He came in to me to lie with me, and I screamed. And it came about when he heard that I raised my voice and screamed that he left his garment beside me and fled and went outside." So she left his garment beside her until his master came home, and she spoke to him with these words, "The Hebrew slave whom you brought to us came in to me to make sport of me. It happened as I raised my voice and screamed that he left his garment beside me and fled outside." Now it came about when his master heard the words of his wife, which she spoke to him, saying, "This is what your slave did to me," that his anger burned. So Joseph's master took him and put him into the jail, the place where the king's prisoners were confined, and there he was in the jail. But the Lord was with Joseph, and extended kindness to him, and gave him favor in the sight of the chief jailer. And the chief jailer committed to Joseph's charge all the prisoners who were in the jail, so that whatever was done there, he was responsible for it. The chief jailer did not supervise anything under Joseph's charge, because the Lord was with him, and whatever he did, the Lord made to prosper. You remember that Joseph was called the dreamer by his brothers, for all the visions and dreams of he had from them bowing down to him. And so they gave him the nickname, the dreamer. Well, I want you to consider tonight what happens when your dreams that you have for your life turn to doubt. When the plans that you have, if you've thought about all of your life's pieces of the puzzle falling into place and they don't happen that way, what are you going to do in response? Are you going to be like Joseph when your dreams turn to doubt? I want you to notice three things from our chapter that we've read tonight that will help us when we face the discouragements and disappointments of life, when our dreams come crashing down. Number one, you don't have to be a slave to your circumstances. When this happens to you and the rug is just pulled right out from underneath you, you don't have to be a slave to your circumstances. Did you notice the bookends of this chapter? Twice at the beginning and twice at the end. It tells us that the Lord was with Joseph when he was being carried away by the Ishmaelites, being sold by his brother, when he is then sold to Potiphar and made a servant in Potiphar's house, and later when he's put in jail, when he's accused of attempted rape of Potiphar's wife. The Lord was with Joseph. But I want you to notice what it said. Because the Lord was with Joseph, look what it says. So he became, verse 2, a successful man. I want you to see that it was very easy for Joseph to say, well, I guess all I'm going to be is a slave. This is what's happened to me. My brothers hated me. They couldn't even speak a kind word to me. Dad hasn't come looking for me. I guess all I'm going to be is a slave the rest of my life. But because the Lord was with him, He caused him to prosper. And even under adverse circumstances, Joseph could still be a successful man. I want you to know, first of all, that you don't have to be a slave to whatever circumstances you're in tonight. I'm afraid sometimes we look for the perfect life. And we expect that because we're Christians, we ought to have the perfect life. Do you know what life that is? That's where you have the perfect marriage. You and your spouse don't ever disagree about anything. And because of that, you produce the perfect children. They don't ever misbehave. They never embarrass you in public. And you, being a perfect family, naturally you live in a perfect house. It's never in disrepair. Everything's always where it's supposed to be. You drive a perfect car that never breaks down. Do your perfect job every day. And should there be any hiccup along the way in this perfect life, well, that's going to easily be satisfied and solved in a neat 30-minute episode of life. Now, is there anybody here tonight whose life works that way? I want to be closer to you. Because that's not the way it works out, is it? It's not that way for God's people. It wasn't that way for Joseph, who got the second most space in the book of Genesis. But even though the circumstances were against him, his brothers could not take away God from him. Potiphar could not remove him from his relationship with the Lord. So he was able to still be successful. You don't have to be a slave to your circumstances. In Philippians chapter 4, when Paul wrote to the church at Philippi, who had a special relationship with the apostle, and they had even been able to help him in his preaching of the gospel. One time he said, you just didn't have the opportunity. But then you did send help. And I want you to notice what he said to them in Philippians chapter 4 at verse 11. He thanked them for their contribution, but then he said, not that I speak from want, for I have learned to be content in whatever circumstances I am. I know how to get along with humble means, and I know how to live in prosperity. In any and every circumstance, I have learned the secret of being filled and going hungry, both of having abundance and suffering need. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Now that last verse is one that we like to quote, and we put it on the bookmark, and we put it all over the house and in the car. But sometimes we focus more on the I. I can do all things. Paul said the secret is through Christ. It doesn't matter if I have a lot or if I have a little. I still have the Lord, and nobody's going to take that from me. And so I've learned the secret of contentment. The joy of knowing Christ the Lord. Have you found the secret? Because when you find that, you won't be a slave to any circumstance of life. You don't have to be a slave to bitterness. Do you know anyone who it just seems like their ability in life is to see the negative in any and every situation? I mean, it doesn't matter what it is. They're able to turn it and look at it from some adverse perspective. 2 years ago in the Houston area, we had a horrible drought. I mean, we were going back to the record books to look at how long it had been since we'd gone this extended period of time with no rain. And there was one lady in the congregation in particular who was distressed by this. Every conversation talked about how bad her plants were doing and how cracked her ground was and everything that was wrong about the weather. Well, finally, we got a torrential downpour. And I was so pleased because it came on a Wednesday and I thought, I can't wait to get to services and see how her attitude has changed. Well, it kept raining and kept raining. So we finally got to the building and here she comes in from the parking lot and she walks in and defiantly shakes out her umbrella and said, we needed rain, but we didn't need this much rain. Do you know anybody like that? I mean, you say, well, I can't think of anybody. Well, maybe you're the one. Maybe that's you that does that. People who are not satisfied being miserable, they want to get as much company as they can and pull everybody down. They're not satisfied themselves being a slave. They want to get as many as they can. Well, you don't have to do that. You don't have to take this root of bitterness that the Hebrew writer calls it, because it grows and takes hold and extends in all these directions. It's got to be rooted out. You don't have to be a slave to discouragement, where all you do is assume the worst instead of thinking the best. You don't have to be a slave to selfishness, always asking, why me? Instead of, what am I going to do about this? We learn from Joseph that you don't have to be a slave to your circumstances. If the Lord is with you, you can still be successful. When your dreams turn to doubt, resist the temptation to become a slave. Number two, we learn that when life, your dreams become disappointment, there is never a right time to do the wrong thing. When your dreams turn to doubt, there is never a right time to do the wrong thing. The Lord was not the only one who was noticing Joseph in this chapter. He is described as handsome in form and appearance. I take that to mean in face and body. And Potiphar's wife looked at him. And she did not make just a one-and-done proposition. We read that day after day she enticed Joseph. And I want you to be impressed with what this 17-year-old boy, who has been abandoned by his family, who is in a place that has no respect for Jehovah God, that he could have very easily justified this by saying, well, I'm out here, I'm a slave, I might as well enjoy it while I'm here. I might as well get something out of this life that's turned into such bitter circumstances. But notice what he said in verse 9. How then could I do this great evil? We might get caught. Is that what it said? How then could I do this great evil? You could get pregnant. How then could I do this great evil, he said, and sin against God? Look at how God has been with me. Look at how He's blessed me and caused me to be successful. How could I betray Him? How could I do that which He said is sinful when He has stood with me, when everyone else has abandoned me? Joseph understood that committing fornication was not going to bring his family back. committing sexual sin was not going to make all of his problems go away. In fact, all that was going to do would be to intensify them. There is never a right time to do the wrong thing. Is it not so that we have a tendency to add trouble to trouble? Things aren't going our way, and so we think we owe it to ourselves to do this. Man has a bad day at the office, and he's worked hard on this project, and somebody else got the credit for it. And so he goes home, takes it out on his wife and kids. Is that going to help the problems at the office next morning? Teenager says, "My parents don't understand me. They don't trust me. They don't know what it's like to be a teenager these days." And so they go out drinking with their friends. How are those trust issues now? The wife has a husband who won't communicate with her. He just won't talk to me. And so she finds someone who does, and they commit adultery. How's the communication gap now? There is never a right time to do the wrong thing. We must remember that we have a Master who is in heaven. And we have to have behavior, no matter the circumstances around us, that are pleasing to Him. How could we do this great evil and sin against a God who's been so good to us? We see that principle from Joseph. You ever had a conversation like that with one of your own brothers and sisters in the Lord? You call them up on the phone and say, "Well, we've really been missing you at the services, and we just wanted to know if there's anything that we could do to help right now." "Well, I've got a lot of things going on in my life right now, and I've got to get all these squared away, and once everything gets back in place, then I'm going to come back to the Lord." And we get that backwards. How will you ever get things right without the Lord? How will you ever be able to iron out all the wrinkles without the help of the Lord's people? These are times we need to be drawing closer to Him, not pushing Him away. These are times we need to surround ourselves with people, not isolate to our corner and retreat. We learn from Joseph. There is never a right time to do the wrong thing. Sin never makes a wrong right. So you remember, you have a Master who is watching. And I want you to notice number three, when your dreams turn to doubt, certainly you don't have to be a slave to your circumstances. And you need to remember that there's not a right time to do the wrong thing. And then number three, God's purposes are greater than your plans. See, you have in your own limited perspective an idea of where you think your life should go. But you need to remember that there is an architect from the throne of heaven who also has a purpose for you. And so when His purposes and your plans don't meet, you remember that His purposes are greater. Joseph was able to see that. Now, it didn't happen overnight, and he didn't see it right away, but as time progressed, and all of these prayers that he were praying, can you imagine Joseph being carted away by that Ishmaelite caravan, and all the while he's thinking, "When Dad finds out, he's going to come get me out of this." Little did he know that the boys went back and told Jacob, Joseph is dead. When he told that servant of Pharaoh who was released from jail, you tell him I'm down here. You tell him my story. And for 2 years, every time he heard the clank of the keys against the door, he thought, well, finally I'm going to be released. And God said, not yet, Joseph. He went on to have children, married to the daughter of Pharaoh. Notice what he named them as we look to Genesis 41 at verse 50. Verse 51, Joseph named the firstborn Manasseh, for he said, God has made me forget all my trouble in all my father's household. And he named the second Ephraim, for he said, God has made me fruitful in the land of my affliction. Again, he sees that the Lord is with me. God is working some plan here. I may not have all the pieces together yet, but He's causing me to prosper and making me be successful, even in this foreign land. Then in chapter 45, when Joseph's brothers come and reveal themselves to him, I want you to notice what he said to them at verse 5. Genesis 45 and verse 5. He said, Now do not be grieved or angry with yourselves because you sold me here. For God sent me before you to preserve life. For the famine has been in the land these 2 years, and there are still 5 years in which there will be neither plowing nor harvesting. And God sent me before you to preserve for you a remnant in the earth and to keep you alive by a great deliverance. Now therefore, it was not you who sent me here, but God, and He has made me a father to Pharaoh and Lord over all his household and ruler over all the land of Egypt. As Joseph looked back on his life, he could see events falling into place of a master plan. If Joseph had not been where Pharaoh could find him when he was troubled by his dream, he would have never been able to interpret. There are going to be 7 years of plenty and then 7 years of famine. So you store up as much as you can in those 7 good years. And because he did that, all the way down in Canaan, when Jacob and his family ran out of food, they were able to come to Egypt, where all of the grain had been stored, and they were kept alive. And there they became a great nation, innumerable as the stars of heaven, and fulfilled the promise made to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. God's purposes are greater than your plans. Can I ask you tonight, do you have faith that the Lord is with you as He was with Joseph? Is this just a story for our entertainment? Something that the kids can do in Bible class or just a good history lesson? Or is it what was written before for our learning that we, through patience and encouragement of the Scriptures, might have hope that God is working in our life? He is not, as our brother has already said tonight, just said, well, I gave you life, you go figure the rest out. And even in times when we have begged Him and He said no, we must have faith that the Lord is with us. Sometimes we think we know what is best. When the kids were a little younger, Morgan was running fever for several days straight. And so her little brother was concerned about her. And finally we were taking her temperature one day and he said, Morgan, I hope your temperature is zero. He thought that was what was best for her. And sometimes we're like that. We think we know what we want and when we want it. And we have to remember God's purposes are greater than our plans. In Romans chapter 8, a verse that is often committed to memory because of the hope that it gives us and the confidence we can place in God. Romans chapter 8 at verse 28, there Paul said, "We know that God causes all things to work together for good to those who love God, to those who are called according to His purpose." If we were to look at that word in the original language, we would notice that the word causes and the word works is the same word. And so it could read this way: we know that God works all things to work together for good to those who love God, to those who are called according to His purpose. What does that mean? It means that God is working. We can only see things from the ground up. He can see them from heaven down. Shouldn't we trust Him then when our plans don't seem to match what He has purposed? Can we not have confidence that He is with us and He knows what is best for us? I can remember praying when I was in college that the Lord would miraculously intervene on the heart of a young girl and make her feel about me the same way I felt about her. And He said no. And I sure have thanked Him. Because then I'd never have met Melissa, and we wouldn't have Morgan and David. And so I want you to thank God for things that didn't happen. Because then you understand His purposes are greater than your plans. This is not the last time Joseph is mentioned in the Bible. He is found in the Great Hall of Faith in Hebrews chapter 11. Now in Genesis, he gets the second most amount of space. In this chapter, he just gets one verse. But what a legacy in Hebrews chapter 11. Look at verse 22. By faith, Joseph, when he was dying, made mention of the exodus of the sons of Israel and gave orders concerning his bones. He understood that the Lord who has been with me in life will be with me in death. And He has promised our nation that there will be a grand exodus from this place and we will go live in the land sworn to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And so with his dying breath, Joseph said, "You don't let my bones stay here. You dig them up, and when God takes us out, you go bury them in the land of my fathers." By faith, Joseph did that. May we have the same faith in God's purpose and plan for us. We learned that from this fourth patriarch. Well, how are you going to respond the next time you encounter various trials when your dreams turn to doubt? Will you respond like Joseph? When the Lord is with you, eventually, may not be here, but one day, your dreams really will come true. May God help us to have faith in Him until we reach that day. Jesus is calling all who are weary and heavy laden by sin, whose lives have been wrecked and destroyed, to come to Him for rest. Not a rest of inactivity, but to learn of Him and to take His yoke and find rest for your soul. He's calling tonight. Would you hear His voice as He calls you in faith and repentance and confession to be baptized in the likeness of our new brother and sister this morning? Would you come back to Him if you've been overcome with doubt and discouragement and lost your faith? He's calling. Hear His voice while we stand and while we sing.